This is the Everything Financial Radio Program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in today. Today I'm going to talk about a couple of really important things with Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff, who's reappearing here on the program. But in particular, I want to spend a good deal of time talking about the Securities Investor Protection Corporation and how they are now suing some fraud victims. Very, very unsettling, so you won't want to miss that conversation. I'm going to spend some time initially in just a moment talking with Professor Kotlikoff about what's going on in the economy. We have a new retirement rules class coming up on November 22, the last one for the year. A quick reminder, you can get more information at newretirementrules.com. The website again, newretirementrules.com. I'm pleased to have back on the Everything Financial Radio program Lawrence J. Kotlikoff. Professor Kotlikoff is a professor of economics at Boston University. He is also a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, a fellow of the Econometrics Society, I should say, a research associate of the National Bureau of Economic Research, president of Economic Security Planning, a company specializing in financial planning software. He's also the director of the Tax Analysis Center. Professor Kotlikoff is a very active columnist. You may have read some of his columns and blogs in publications such as the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, the Boston Globe, Bloomberg, and Forbes, just to name a few. He is also a returning guest here on the Everything Financial Radio program. So, Professor, welcome back.
Great to be back with you, Dennis.
Professor, let me just jump in because I think that as we approach here midterm elections, seems that there are a lot of candidates out there. One particularly where I live that say we're going to cut taxes and we're going to balance the budget, and it sounds like a lot of the same old political rhetoric to me. Can you talk about the real fiscal situation of the United States of America?
Yeah, absolutely. The country is totally, completely, entirely broke on a fiscal basis. If you look at the Congressional Budget Office's July projection of all the spending the government is expecting to do and all the taxes it's expecting to receive, the difference valued in the present, what we call the present value fiscal gap, between the path of expenditures and the path of taxes, that present value difference is $210 trillion. So the fiscal gap of the country is $210 trillion. That's the true debt of the country. The official debt that's being focused on is only $13 trillion. So what this is telling us is that almost all the liabilities that aren't being covered by future taxes are off the books, aren't being recorded. And I'm talking about the checks my mom gets every month from Social Security, for example. That's a absolutely clear-cut, rock-solid obligation, not on the books. Social Security has $25 trillion fiscal gap on its own out of the $210 trillion fiscal gap. $25 trillion of that is coming from the Social Security system. You can check the Social Security Trustees Report, Table 6F1, and see that number. And that's not counted as part of the official debt, because our government's been doing Enron-type accounting for decades. And as a result, we've got all these off-the-book liabilities. Even though there's absolutely no way on this God's earth that my mom's not going to get paid her Social Security benefits, and they are inflation protected. They're much more secure, actually, than these pieces of paper that say they come with the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, because they can be inflated away, the government bonds, the official government bonds. So the country is broke, and coming up with $210 trillion to eliminate the fiscal gap would require an immediate and permanent 58% increase in every single federal tax. So all the federal tax revenues now to the end of time have to really go up every year be higher by 58%. So another way of saying this is that our government is 58% underfinanced, underfunded. The Social Security system on its own is 33% underfinanced. Detroit's pension system was about 20% underfinanced, to put this in perspective. So if you think Detroit is broke, our country is broke like 2.5 times more than Detroit.
Professor, that is sobering. And you threw out a number the fiscal gap of $210 trillion. When there's slightly more than 300 million people that live in the United States, obviously that's a gap that cannot be closed. How does this get addressed? I mean, the politicians don't seem to be addressing it. And if they don't, at what point does the rubber meet the proverbial road and we have a problem? And what does that problem look like?
The problem looks like Argentina. When you go down that road, if you don't actually address these things, if you keep hiding the truth from the public, there's a bill in front of Congress now called the Inform Act. If you go to theinformact.org, I-N-F-O-R-M-A-C-T, so T-H-E, theinformact.org, where over 1,200 economists from every top university in the country and 17 Nobel Prize winners in economics are endorsing or calling on the CBO via this bill that's been introduced in Congress, the CBO and the GAO and the OMB to do fiscal gap accounting, this long-term fiscal gap accounting that doesn't leave anything off the books. So economists are saying collectively, as a group, with the exception of some people like Paul Krugman on the left and probably Art Laffer on the right, that that we need to put everything on the books and first of all, reveal the magnitude of the problem and then address it, because what we're now doing is ignoring it, and we're printing money because people, at some level, the pressure is on Congress to, we have been running large official deficits in the last 5 years on average, and it's not like the government is feeling itself, ready to start spending a lot more money than it is. It's already spending enough, but the pressure has been taken off Congress to a large extent because the Federal Reserve under Bernanke was printing money out the wazoo. Chairman Yellen has, or Chair Yellen of the Federal Reserve has reversed course on that. As I understand it, they're not printing as much money and they're eliminating the quantitative easing. But the quantitative easing was really about printing money to ease the obligation, responsibility of Congress and the President to pay for what it spends via taxes. And so how do I think that this will all play out? Well, when countries don't cover their fiscal bills and don't with taxes, they start printing money. But we've seen that in spades over the last 7 years. There's been a quadrupling of the amount of money that was printed. In the entire history of the Republic, there was about $800 billion printed by the Fed up through 2007. We now have about $3.2 trillion. So there's been a quadrupling of what's called the base money supply. That's now coming to an end. And unfortunately, a lot of these bills that are off the books are coming due in the future, so they're not readily visible. They're, when the baby boomers fully retire, they're going to be getting, on average, $30,000 per person in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid benefits. And that's a very big number. So the aging of society is part of the issue, the fact that spending is high and taxes are low, looking out, the fact that Medicare, Medicaid benefit levels are projected to still grow in excess of what they can reach, should be growing at in terms of keeping pace with per capita GDP. So, everywhere you look, you see Obamacare costs are high and could go out of control. I'm not even talking really in this $210 trillion fiscal gap of the real downside risk of things even being worse. I mean, this is really in many ways an optimistic scenario. It's that we don't have another big recession. We don't have Wall Street again taking the economy down the tubes by hiding what it's doing, engaging in fraudulent behavior and producing a run on the bank because nobody can tell what they're investing in. And they see a few stories about liar loans or whatever, and that's enough to gin up an entire run on the entire financial system because we have what is a very much a corrupt, opaque financial enterprise, Wall Street. So, I think that we could have a slow, you know, cancer in some people develops slowly and you gradually die. You know, you can't see the tumor, it gets bigger slowly, gradually, and eventually it attacks some organ and you die. But it may be a very slow process or it can kill you overnight. And I can't say what's going to kill this economy, whether it's going to be a overnight thing or a slow thing, but so far it's been a slow thing. But there's no question that this fiscal policy we've been running is hurting the economy. It's led to a saving rate that's essentially close to zero and an investment rate that's extremely low. We're now saving 2% of national income. I think we're investing around 5% of national income. These numbers were around 15% in 1950. And when you spend more than you can afford, it shows up in terms of high consumption by households. And that's because they're not being faced with the taxes that they should be faced with to pay for the spending that they're much of which they're receiving as transfer payments. So they consume more, and you have less national saving, and therefore less wherewithal to invest with. And then workers, young people, have less capital to work with because there's been a lower investment rate. And that's been true for decades now, that our investment rate has been very low on a net basis. And consequently, real wages are much lower than they would otherwise have been. So you got, you know, a lot of factors pushing down wages or keeping wages of particularly of young people very low. In real terms, real wages are not much higher than they were in the mid-1960s, if you leave out fringe benefits, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So we've got a country whose dream, you know, the American dream, has really turned into a nightmare. And it's because of one poorly formulated policy after another and just hiding the facts. Both parties conspiring to expropriate our children in this process.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there in this segment, but we're chatting today with Professor Kotlikoff, and we'll continue our conversation with him when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. I'll be continuing my conversation with Professor Kotlikoff in the next segment. And in that next segment, one of the things I want to talk to the professor about is an article, a really interesting article that the professor wrote back in July. The article appeared in Forbes magazine. The professor is a Forbes columnist, and the title of the article is "The Huge SIPC Risk Your Broker Isn't Disclosing." Now, SIPC, for anybody that has a brokerage account, you know that stands for Securities Investor Protection Corporation. And SIPC is supposed to insure you for up to $500,000 if your brokerage firm goes broke. I want to give you just a bit from the professor's article because it will help you kind of understand and give you the contextual information you need to get a full value from the conversation I intend to have with the professor in the next segment. This from the Forbes article authored by Professor Kotlikoff. Your broker has a duty to disclose all risks from investing with him and his company. He also has an obligation to tell the truth. If he misleads you, including failing to disclose a major risk to your investment, you can sue him personally. There's one huge investment risk that your broker surely is not disclosing. It's the risk arising from SIPC, the so-called Securities Investor Protection Corporation. And there's one extremely serious misrepresentation he is surely making, namely that your brokerage account is insured by SIPC. The professor states falsely claiming that you are insured represents financial fraud. Now, that's a really strong statement, and I'm going to ask the professor about that in the next segment. But the professor goes on in the Forbes article and says, let's start with three basic facts. First, SIPC, the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, is a company mandated by Congress, but owned and operated by Wall Street firms, the largest of which have a well-deserved reputation for dishonesty. City's $7 billion settlement with the Justice Department for marketing fraudulent securities made just days ago is the latest evidence in this regard. And keep in mind, this article actually appeared in Forbes on July the 16th. The second fact the professor points out in the article is SIPC, in other words, Wall Street, is supposed to pay you up to $500,000 if your brokerage firm goes bust, including going bust due to fraud. There are multitudinous ways for brokerages to defraud their clients, get caught, and go under. But if SIPC chooses to define the fraud as a Ponzi scheme, it can, one, avoid making good on its insurance pledge, and two, accuse you of participating in the theft for up to 6 years and sue you to recover the funds you stole. Let me repeat that. If SIPC, Securities Investor Protection Corporation, chooses to define a fraud as a Ponzi scheme, it can, one, avoid making good on its insurance pledge, and two, it can accuse you of participating in the theft for up to 6 years and sue you to recover the funds you stole. Now, the professor points out a New York Times article that says that there is a new Ponzi scheme uncovered every 4 days. This article was published on July the 10th, written by a lady by the name of Elizabeth Olson. The title of the article, again appearing in the New York Times, is "Despite Exposure of Madoff Fraud, New Ponzi Schemes Emerge." And there are a number of Ponzi schemes that are noted in the article, and in the interest of time here, I'm not going to go through them, but you can go find the article online. There is a Tampa, Florida lawyer by the name of Jordan D. Maglich, who is quoted in the article, and Mr. Maglich is a lawyer who follows Ponzi schemes. In fact, he even started a website titled PonziTracker.com in 2009 after working with his law firm to help recover a $350 million Ponzi scheme that was perpetrated by a Sarasota, Florida hedge fund manager. Mr. Maglich says, every other day you see new schemes uncovered that involve big dollar amounts. Over the last 5 years, Mr. Maglich said he has followed about 500 Ponzi schemes on the site, which includes links to legal documents, including those filed by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which posts some of them on its website, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, and state financial authorities. Now, the New York Times article said such swindles are largely viewed as distasteful cousins in the high-rolling world of securities, but they still rake in amounts that could be envied on Wall Street. In May of this year alone, at least 9 newly discovered Ponzi schemes were claimed to involve more than $96 million, says Kathy Bazoian Phelps, a Los Angeles lawyer who keeps a running tally on her blog. The numbers are extraordinary, Ms. Phelps said. She co-authored the book, The Ponzi Book, a legal resource for unraveling Ponzi scheme, and the totals earlier months of this year were even higher. So this is an ongoing problem. On the state level, according to the New York Times article, Ponzi schemes were the third most frequent source of state enforcement actions in 2012. Enforcement actions jumped 45% in the 2011 fiscal year. And Mr. Bart Chilton, who is a former commissioner on the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, said that such mini Madoff scams are taking place across the nation. People were getting ripped off with a lot of foreign exchange deals, which are not as complicated as options and commodities pools. They were losing money they had set aside for college funds or healthcare expenses or retirement. So this is happening, and it is a real, real problem for some Americans out there. Now, here's what Professor Kotlikoff points out. Should you have money in a brokerage account and take all the money out and spend it, say, for college expenses, you can actually be sued for any growth over and above any growth that occurred in your account. So let's say you put $20,000 in an account for college. It grew to $80,000. You took it out to pay for college. Now, some broker at this brokerage firm that you don't even know perpetrates a fraud. For a period of 6 years, you can be sued for the $60,000 growth in your account. It's happening. I'm going to spend more time explaining it in the last segment of today's program, and I'll be asking Professor Kotlikoff to expand on what he talked about here in his Forbes article in the next segment. You'll want to stay tuned for that. Everything Financial Radio will return after these words.
Give me your money. Just give me money.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I have the distinct pleasure of chatting today with returning guest, Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff. And Professor, great stuff in the last segment. And if the listeners want to learn more about what it is that you do, what would you have them do?
Well, I do a lot of things. At Kotlikoff.net is my main website where I post columns and academic research. But I also have a financial planning software company, so if people need help with figuring out how to take Social Security, we talked about that on a prior show, they can go to MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com, so it's MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com, if they want to get a terrific tool to do long-term financial planning, including Social Security planning. They can go to ESPlanner.com, that stands for Economic Security Planner, ESPlanner.com. These are top-ranked software programs. I think they're the best tools around for figuring out your finances. The other thing is, you know, I've got columns about that touch on very personal financial. You know, I write a column every week for TBS NewsHour about answering questions about Social Security, but I also post columns on Forbes as a blogger about personal financial matters and also national matters. But the most recent thing I've been writing about that may be of interest to some of your listeners, Dennis, is that I through knowledge of family members, experience, and friends and colleagues with the Madoff scandal, know a lot about the CIPIC brokerage insurance that your listeners who have brokerage accounts think that they're insured by CIPIC. Which is the Security Investor Protection Corporation, which is a insurance company set up by Wall Street firms under a mandate by Congress. So these Wall Street firms are, you know, we're talking about banks, big brokerage companies, and the large banks, which have brokerages. They've tried through CIPIC to make sure that nobody gets paid off when a brokerage firm goes under because of fraud. So if you look at the Madoff victims, the victims of the Stanford Ponzi scheme, which is the second largest Ponzi scheme, which was discovered right after Madoff's was discovered. And then there's another recent very big Ponzi scheme called the McGinn-Smith Ponzi scheme, occurred in New York around Albany, in the area around Albany. The vast majority of the victims, over 10,000 Americans who were supposedly insured by CIPIC, they were lured into investing in those brokerage firms because of the CIPIC signs on the desk of the brokers, they were received no insurance recovery from CIPIC. None of the $500,000 of coverage that CIPIC said that they were extending because of technicalities or because of a, well, in the case of the Madoff fraud, what CIPIC did was set up a definition of who deserved to be insured, paid off, that actually leaves everybody at enormous risk from having a brokerage account. If you have a minute, I can just explain this risk. It's really quite incredible, and I've written columns called Close Your Brokerage Account, which is a very strong statement for somebody like me to make, to tell people to close their brokerage account, because the way things are set up, in a nutshell, is that if you invest money in a brokerage account and you do well and you're told that you're making a return and you take your money out, including the principal, well, maybe you may leave some money in, but anyway, you take a bunch of your money out. Maybe you've had it in your broker for 40 years. Well, suppose that 6 years later or 6 years short of one day later, they find a fraud occurred in that brokerage account. It may have nothing to do with your broker, might have no, you know, somebody they hired 3 years after you left that brokerage account. Anyway, what will happen is that you can be sued for up to every penny that you withdrew by SIPC, by this supposed insurance company. So it's not just that SIPC is reneging on its insurance obligations using technicalities or crazy, absolutely crazy, insane definitions of who's should be insured. And they've gotten the court with very high-priced lawyers to the court system, the appeals court system, to agree to these definitions of who actually has a legal claim to SIPC's insurance. But they also are putting people in double jeopardy of being sued by SIPC for using money that they were told and understood to have earned in their account. So you have Madoff victims, for example, who put their money in 30 years ago. It did well. Madoff never advertised returns above, much above or the S&P return, so he wasn't claiming to making, vastly higher returns. He basically got S&P-type returns. They took their money out to spend on their, wife's cancer treatment or their kid's education or their, buying into a nursing home, whatever it was, giving money to charity. And now they're being sued by SIPC for... they're basically being treated as criminals, as having stolen the money that because they understood this money to be the money that they had legitimately earned by investing with Madoff, and he was sending them monthly account statements showing exactly all the investments, and they then withdrew money from Madoff and spent it in these ways, and then 6 years later, all the money that they took out up to the 6 years before Madoff was discovered can be sued back, depending on the actual circumstance. Up to that amount, depending on the circumstances, can be sued back. So what has happened now is that anybody who's got a brokerage account cannot safely spend their principal plus interest and sleep at night for the next 6 years. Because if you spend that money and it's insured by SIPC, which almost every brokerage account in the country is insured by, then if they discover a fraud over the next 6 years after you take your money out, they can come back to you for it. They can sue you, and they will sue you. And they are now suing hundreds, if not thousands, of Madoff victims.
So that suggests, Professor, that certainly you want to choose your brokerage accounts very carefully.
Well, it's not an issue. Yeah, but if you're with a big brokerage firm like Merrill Lynch, there could be a few rogue traders who are off on the side who are hired 3 years after you take the money out to bring the thing down with some, naked short or on some CDS. I mean, who knows exactly what these guys are up to, because we've seen rogue traders bring down. Look, there's a rogue trader who brought down Barron's Bank, which is the oldest bank in the world, Nick Leeson. With one trade in one evening, brings down the largest, that's not the largest, but the oldest bank in the world, Barings Bank of England, and with one trade. So how do you keep track of all the brokers and what they're doing at Merrill Lynch or Bank or J.P. Morgan or Goldman Sachs? You can't. And also, there's a Ponzi scheme being discovered every 4 days, according to a New York Times article that came out about 3 weeks ago. I think it was front page of the New York Times. They discussed discovery every 4 days of a Ponzi scheme. So it's just rampant. The corruption and fraud is rampant. So SIPC, rather than, is luring people to invest with these brokerages by claiming left, right, and center that they're going to provide insurance up to $500,000 against the loss of securities. Well, as soon as these frauds are discovered, they come up with technical reasons or definitions, which only Stalin or Lenin could have developed, that keep you from having any insurance claim. And then they turn around and sue you if you actually spend your money, or at least money that you thought was yours.
Professor, have any of these lawsuits actually come to some conclusion or settlement, or are these still all in process, in your opinion? or from your experience?
People are actively being sued. I have relatives who are being sued by CIPIC. I know people, so there are people being sued today by CIPIC, victims who are being further victimized by, who've lost their entire retirement and are being further victimized by CIPIC, by its extremely high-priced lawyers. The law firm that CIPIC hired has billed like $1 billion to something, I think it's almost $1 billion or over $1 billion for trying to, quote, help the situation. The trustees got a law firm who's put that kind of billing. So these people are just raking in the money from the victims, and then they're diverting everybody's attention from CIPIC by going after some victims to say that they'll give the money from some victims to other victims. And so that's diverting attention. But it's no longer a matter of what's happened to the Madoff victims or to the Stanford victims or the McGinn-Smith victims. It's really a matter for all Americans now who have brokerage accounts, because of court decisions that CIPIC has engineered in the Second Circuit in New York, and also the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. They produced decisions which put every person who's got a brokerage account in this country at extreme risk from having a brokerage account. So there is a bill in front of Congress that has been introduced by Congressman Garrett, the Republican in the House, and Senator Schumer, a Democrat, and also Senator Vitter, he's a Republican in the Senate, that would eliminate this, would force CIPIC to actually honestly insure brokerage accounts and keep them from suing people who just do what any normal American would do, which is to, if you got to return your investment, you spend it. That's the whole reason of saving and investing, to make some money and enjoy life, or use it for a good cause, or give it to charity, or whatever, but not to be sued. So there is a bill in front of Congress, and everybody can read about that bill. They come to my website, kotlikoff.net, and look at the column, find the column, just kind of go down the list and find the column that's called Close Your Brokerage Account, and then there's other columns about CIPIC. So I had a big exchange with the head of CIPIC. It's one of the columns. I'm rebutting his response to my Close Your Brokerage Account column, so you can see what he thinks and my response to him. But it's just amazing what CIPIC has done to investors. It's put them in extreme risk. I don't think anybody, I would not get within a mile of a brokerage account today.
Well, Professor, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Can't wait to have you back, but we're going to have to leave it there. We certainly appreciate you joining us today.
My pleasure.
Everything Financial Radio returns after these words. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen, and a big thank you to Professor Kotlikoff for joining us on today's program. I want to take just a little more time and talk about what Professor Kotlikoff brought up in the last segment. Take a little bit more time to explain it, because I think it's something that a lot of folks aren't aware of, but should be. And the resources I'm going to use in this segment come from columns that Professor Kotlikoff actually wrote that appeared in Forbes. One was published on July the 16th. The other was published on June the 18th of this year. So the first article that the professor published back in June was simply titled Close Your Brokerage Account. I'm going to give you just a bit from that article. Every day brings fresh reports of gross misconduct in the financial sector. So it makes sense to worry about how well your money is protected from fraudsters. Your bank account is guaranteed for up to $250,000 by a government agency. That's FDIC, or the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. If you have an account at any of our nation's 4,000 brokerage firms, however, your money is protected for up to $500,000 by a Wall Street agency, the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, with no government guarantee. SIPC was established by an act of Congress in 1970, but Wall Street controls it, And asking Wall Street to protect investors from Wall Street is asking for trouble. And again, this is from the professor's article. SIPC's website boasts, SIPC protects customers if their brokerage firm fails. The professor says nothing could be further from the truth. Investors with accounts at firms that fail as a result of fraud can, incredibly, be forced to pay an SIPC-appointed trustee money rather than the other way around. Here's how the swindle can work, based largely on a real case. In 1992, when their daughter Sarah was born, Frank and Sally invested $40,000 in a brokerage account for her college tuition. Investing early and letting capital markets work for them was smart. By 2010, they had $160,000, just enough to cover 4 years of college tuition. Their daughter Sarah graduated in May. The next day, Frank and Sally learned that their brokerage firm had been shut down due to fraud, with not a penny left. They were shocked, but thank God they hadn't lost any of their investment. Then Sam, their accountant, told Frank and Sally the awful truth. They owed the SIPC-appointed trustee for their broker $80,000, and they'd be sued if they didn't pay. How could this be? If a bankrupt brokerage firm was crooked, SIPC treats innocent customers as if they were complicit in the fraud, demanding they pay back any money they took out in the prior 2 years, up to the amount of their cumulative withdrawals over the life of the account exceeded contributions. Let me say that again just so you're familiar with it. If a bankrupt brokerage firm was crooked, SIPC, the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, treats innocent customers as if they were part of or complicit in the fraud, and they will demand they pay back any money they took out in the prior 2 years up to the amount of their cumulative withdrawals over the life of the account that exceeded contributions. The notion that savers who withdraw the fruits of their investment, something every IRA brokerage account holder over age 70 is legally required to do, should be treated as criminals for spending those investment returns is antithetical to capitalism as it gets. Now, what if Frank and Sally had taken out $80,000 3 years ago? Keep in mind, they put $40,000 in when their daughter was born. The $40,000 grew to $160,000. Well, what if Frank and Sally had taken out $80,000 3 years ago and had $80,000 left in the account? They wouldn't get sued, but according to the SIPC, they wouldn't be entitled to recover any of the $80,000 because their net equity in the account, the difference between their contributions and withdrawals, is negative. So their contributions were $40,000, their withdrawals were $80,000. You've already taken out more than you put in. We don't owe you anything, is what SIP is saying, according to the professor in this article. So they aren't entitled to appreciation on their investment, even though they paid taxes on that appreciation and could have earned similar returns in honest brokerages. When an SIPC-appointed trustee sues innocent victims like Frank and Sally, every dollar he collects or saves is a dollar less Wall Street has to pay to support the SIPC. In effect, according to the professor, Wall Street uses the SIPC to further defraud people who have already been defrauded. Now, there is a bill before Congress. It's a bipartisan bill. It's H.R. 3482, and in the Senate, it's S. 1725, which would actually base SIPC's definition of net equity on the brokerage statement that Frank and Sally were sent before their broker went belly up. The professor says, though, until that law is passed, the best way to avoid the SIPC threat is simply not to invest in brokerage accounts, period. So I would encourage all the listeners, call your congressman, call your senators, say support H.R. 3482, support S. 1725. It's really, really important. Now, going back to the article the professor wrote in July on the 16th, he talks about, again, this simple math that the SIPC uses to renege on its insurance commitment and put you in truly terrible danger for doing what every investor expects and is entitled to do, spend the proceeds of his investment. So X, in this example, is the difference between withdrawals and contributions over the entire history of your account. We all invest on the basis of X being positive, that my investment's going to grow. We're going to earn a return on our investment, and therefore we're going to be able to take out more than we put in. But if X is positive when your brokerage goes under, and SIPC calls it a Ponzi scheme, you not only lose every penny of your remaining account balance, which we'll call Y, you also get no insurance protection from SIPC. Not a penny, not a dime, not a quarter, and certainly not $500,000. Now, Y could be all the money you have left in the world. It could be far larger or smaller than $500,000, but as long as X is a penny or more, SIPC will claim you a net winner and pay you nothing whatsoever on your insurance claim. In addition to not paying your insurance claim, SIPC will have its trustee sue you up to the amount X for every penny you withdrew from your account over the last 6 years with no credit given whatsoever for contributions you made to your account over the past 6 years. So say you saved $200,000 and you saved up $200,000 rather, and you invested it 40 years ago with your Kansas broker whose brokerage company operates out of New York, which has a 6-year clawback rule. That clawback number will vary by state. Had the investment yielded the stock market's historic 10% average return and you let the money ride, your account balance would exceed $9 million. But it's only $1.4 million because your return, as reported to you, wasn't always great because you took out $300,000 to pay for your mom's nursing home. You took $100,000 out a year for the past 6 years to help your daughter start a business, to cover medical bills, to contribute to your church, and help finance your retirement. The $1.4 million would be only $1.35 million had you not invested $50,000 3 weeks ago at the strong suggestion of your broker. Today, you learn that your brokerage is broke. It borrowed heavily, pledging your securities and those of other customers as collateral to place a huge bet that went south. You're appalled, especially when you learn that the brokerage's top management had been doing this for years while covering its losses with new investors' funds. The SIPC rides to the rescue, but then it realizes, as it did in the Madoff case, that it doesn't have the funds to cover its insurance obligation, and it certainly doesn't want to assess its members, so it declares the bankruptcy a Ponzi scheme. You've just lost $1.4 million, virtually your entire remaining retirement savings. You call up the SIPC to request the $500,000 insurance, and the SIPC says, sorry, you're a net winner because you took out $900,000 over the last 40 years and you contributed $250,000. We don't owe you anything. And because you took $600,000 over the last 6 years, and because $600,000 is less than your total positive experience in the account, you owe us $600,000. That's what's happening. We talk about this at our new retirement rules class in detail. It's something that we just added. If you've not yet attended a new retirement rules class, we do have a one-day class coming up on November the 22nd. You can get more information on the class by simply visiting newretirementrules.com. You can also register there while capacity remains. That will be our last class of the year, November 22. It will be held at the East Beltline campus of West Michigan University. Again, the website, newretirementrules.com. That's all for this week. Bye.